My brief is to talk about the report on financing innovation, which if you don't have a copy yet, there are plenty of copies around, so make sure you get one. I chair the Business Innovation Forum at the Royal Society of Edinburgh, and we decided a few months ago to set our task of looking into how innovation is financed in Scotland. And Gordon Eady did most of the legwork on this, went to interview a lot of managing directors and so forth, and then we had a round table and brought together pretty much the main disciplines who were involved in this process and came up with our report. So that's the basis of what we're talking about. But I guess if we're talking about what I'm on about, this might be a good example. How to form your very own Silicon Valley startup. It says go to Menlo Park, which is a town near Stanford University, and you find a tree and you shake your tree and a venture capitalist will fall out. And before the venture capitalist regains his wits, you recite the following: internet, electronic commerce, applications, enterprise, and so on. And the venture capitalist will give you $4 million. And 18 months later, you go public. And after you receive your check, you go back to Menlo Park and you find a tree. And this is the process that we're trying to emulate around the world. In fact, you climb it and you wait, okay? So the idea, of course, is that we're talking about generations after generations of people who've built businesses, made a lot of money, and put their money into the next generation of businesses. And this is what happened, I guess. I mean, David Hewlett and Bill Packard. Bill, is that right around? Yeah, sorry?
Bill Gates?
No, well, Bill Gates was a bit later. But David Hewlett and Bill Packard did this in 1937, I think, and started Silicon Valley, really. And there have been generations and generations of people since then. And in fact, this is a double-page spread from Wired magazine. It's actually quite a while ago now, but this is the silicon wannabes around the world. And not each one of these blobs is a bit of silicon activity. Actually, that one there, here is Silicon Glen, you might remember. Silicon Fen is the bigger one, which is Cambridge. The one to the right, left of that is apparently Silicon Bog, which is in Ireland. So we've got all these silicon wannabes around the world. I'm trying to emulate essentially the economic benefit of this. And of course, the economic benefit is fantastic. You know, it really is. I mean, Apple is the biggest company in the world. Google and Facebook didn't exist 10, 12 years ago. And now they're massive, powerful companies, and each one of them based in Silicon Valley. So this kind of economy is one to be sought after. And so we do, and obviously we might have the raw materials. We have a very strong science base, strong technology base in Scotland. So, you know, we should be looking towards doing this type of thing. But of course the problem is, where does, you know, the funding come from? Because in order to develop technology, you often require to bring in funding. I mean, it's very unusual for a product to be fully formed. You need to, you know, put the money into researching it, developing it, turning it into products and so forth before you can take it out. Well, there used to be quite a good atmosphere, and well, I don't know about good, but anyway, in the late 90s, before the dot-com bust, this is the type of situation you would get. Wally, we're venture capitalists, we say, we want to invest in your web-based business. And Wally says, I don't own a web-based business, I'm just an engineer with a cool ponytail. And the guy says, that's good enough for us, we'd like to get in early. And that actually literally was the way it was in the 90s. But I'm afraid it stopped since then. I'm using an iPad here for the first time, and my numbers have got missing. But if you can look at the size of these various categories, you'll see that... So ignore the numbers. But if you look at the seed rounds, the amount of capital that went into seed round in 1999 was, I don't know, about 5% or so, or 8%. And then A rounds was quite a big chunk, the substantial chunk, and then B round in later stage. And you'll see over the years, the dot-com boom and bust in 2001 paid to this. But basically, over those 5 years, seed money became much more difficult to get. People were less involved at the very early stages, investing in real risk. And A rounds, which is also early stage and real risk, has got shrunken down to maybe about, 15% now. B rounds got shrunk, and the later stages have been getting all the money. So this is what's been happening with financing innovation. And this was up to 2005. It's not got any better since. It's got worse. So we decided to have a look at this whole area in terms of this context of Scotland. And so we produced a discussion. Gordon worked on, you know, doing a lot of people, and produced a discussion paper as input to a workshop. And we had the workshop here, sort of two-hour meeting. And we had 20 attendees from the various categories: banks, venture capitalists, government, professional advisors and so forth. And we've actually now produced the final report. The big problem is that, as I say, risk capital has dried up. The 2001 dot-com boom bust wiped out a lot of value. I mean, there was a lot of supposed wealth out there that didn't really exist. And when it went pop, the values were destroyed. And that obviously completely killed off the returns from that sector. Post-2001 funds were doing okay until about 2008. We all know what happened in 2008. And the financial crisis also wiped out a lot of exits and a lot of IPOs. You just don't get IPOs of technology companies these days. It hasn't happened for many years now. And so you're relying on trade exits, and trade exits have been tougher to get as well. So by and large, for the last 12 years or so, risk capital has not been getting the returns it should have to get in order to justify its existence. And if you don't get the returns, then I'm afraid people don't put money into your category. So by and large, people with corporate funds to invest have steered away from early stage risk capital and investing in technology and so forth. In fact, if we look at a couple of these figures, you'll see what's actually happened here. So this is the IRR returns. This is the annual return of funds invested in a particular year. And you'll see that in venture, which is really the risk stuff, it started off very healthily and then it just absolutely disappeared in the aftermath of the dot-com boom and bust. So now you've got the venture returns for the last few years have been non-existent or indeed occasionally, occasionally negative. And you're finding out that most of the returns these days come from management buyouts, the small management buyouts, the medium and the large. And investment companies find it's a lot easier to turn around a dozy company that's maybe a family-managed company or something. They can buy it out, they can turn it around, smarten up the management, sell it again, and make quite a lot of money quite quickly. At the top end, the large MBOs, a lot of that is things like privatizations. You know, you've got a telecom company in a small country that the government's privatizing. It's usually dozily run. Take it over, smarten it up, sell it off, make a lot of money. So that's been the category. And so for the last, 8 years, we haven't seen any return in venture. If you look at technology, it's just as bad. The returns on technology, again, dried up after the dot-com boom and bust. And technology investments, by and large, and these are figures from the British Venture Capital Association, so these are UK investments in risk capital. And you'll see that technology has been dotting around the zero or negative percents for the last few years. So because of that, there's a crisis. And what's happened? Well, the angels have come to the rescue and angels have taken the strain, helped very much by the fact that the UK has a very good tax break system for angels. We've got the Enterprise Investment Scheme, and this year we've got the Seed Enterprise Scheme. And these provide tax breaks when an angel invests in a company. They get 30% off their income tax bill. So if you invest £10,000, you get £3,000 back from your tax bill. If you invest in a seed company, you get £5,000 back, so you get 50% back. And also, when the companies are sold, the gains are tax-free. So that's very attractive, and that's created a climate of angel investors in the UK. And that's been going quite a while now, so that survived several governments. It was actually Kenneth Clark who brought it in, I think, about 95, 96. And it survived the transfer to the Labour government, and it survived the transfer back to the Conservative government and so forth. So it seems to be a fixed point in the landscape that these tax breaks are available to angel investors. Here in Scotland, we've got a particular situation in that we've got the Scottish Co-Investment Fund, which basically approves angel groups and will invest with them pretty much automatically. So the Scottish Co-Investment Fund doesn't look at individual companies. It looks at the angel groups themselves, approves them, and once they're there, invests with them. And that means that an angel group that can raise 400,000 can immediately invest 800,000. And that's a very crucial part of the mix because that type of funding, between the sort of half million, million and a half type funding, that's the kind of seed funding that a lot of technology companies need. And so the co-investment fund has meant that that's really been very useful in Scotland. When I was on the board of Scottish Enterprise, we started the co-investment fund, I think it was about 2003, and there were three angel groups in Scotland, and now there are 19. So this has been a very successful process in terms of creating that category of seed investment in Scotland. However, there are some downsides. Angels are usually limited. I mean, they've got a certain depth of pocket, but they don't go, you know. And so they're usually limited to under £2 million deals. Not suitable for larger, more ambitious and longer term companies. So something like a life sciences or a green energy company might need a lot more money for a lot longer. That's very, very difficult to do with angel money. And angels don't mix very well with later venture capital because angels are because the enterprise investment scheme requires you to only have common stock, ordinary shares, and venture capitalists almost always want pref shares. You find that you find yourself a very second-class citizen in the shareholder register when venture capital comes in. And so because of that, a lot of angel groups just don't really want to move companies onto venture capital. And the end result is that companies get sold probably too young or too early or too cheap. Okay, so we decided that we needed to have another look at all this area, and particularly where the larger scale money is coming from, because as I said earlier, this category is now being wiped out by and large. There are very, very few venture capitalists who are willing to take risks. So we had a look, and we've come up with a number of areas that we think are worth investigating. The sort of things that we might think about is, now back in 1979, the USA changed its regulations, and it made it possible for pension funds to invest in risk capital for the first time. And actually, that's largely driven a lot of the funding in venture capital in the States. By and large, pension funds do not invest in venture capital or risk capital in the UK because it's not a good category for them to do because their actuaries tell them it can't be done and all that type of thing. But actually, there are ways of constructing. I'm convinced there are ways of constructing a fund that would give a guaranteed return to a pension fund that they'd be quite happy with. And so we should be looking at these types of models. We might look at new personal investment vehicles, maybe a Scottish innovation fund based on VCT models, which give you good tax breaks. There are ways in which I think we could do something about that. Crowdfunding methods, they're very early stage and they tend to be supporting theatre groups and things, but they could be developed and they could turn into more effective things. And I think one of the things that Scottish Enterprise used to do, they used to run a division called the Scottish Development, SDF, Scottish Development Finance, and they were venture capitalists. They were red and tooth and claw venture capitalists. They co-invested with real venture capitalists. They never took more than 50% of a deal. They were very, very straightforward people. But they actually brought in a lot of partners from overseas, and so you got a deal. I mean, my company was invested by SDF, and my three other investors were all London-based. And because SDF was here, they invested in us. They were, at the board meetings and so forth. And STF was turned into Scottish Equity Partners in about 2004. And that was the right thing to do, but it's a sad loss because STF was required to invest only in Scotland and only in technology, and they did very well at it. And we need to, I think about whether there's a good case to reinvent some new STFs, particularly in areas, as I said earlier, like life sciences or green energy or so, that require that kind of support. And I think that's it. So we've all got to start somewhere, and I don't know if anybody can work out what this is. Any ideas? It's Bill Hewlett's garage, And here in Scotland we've got facilities as good as this.